You're listening to Game Play on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Game Play. I'm your host, Matthew Kaz. Only a couple days, four days away from the NFC-AFC Championship games. And I just, you know, let's start here. Robert Mays is joining us, the host of the Athletic Football Show and NFL writer with The Athletic. Robert, like, I don't think there's any way we can match what we saw last weekend. But what's sort of the best case scenario we see this weekend that at least we don't feel, you know, the bends in terms of the quality in weekends?
Sorry, one more time.
Okay, last weekend, incredible playoffs. And I don't expect this weekend to be as good. But what needs to happen in the AFC-NFC championship game where, at the very least, we can feel that we got an entertainment product nearly as good as what we got last weekend?
Oh, I think the NFC championship game, as is, if we see round three of the games that we've seen from these teams in the past over the last couple of years, I mean, I feel like they play each other very close. Obviously, the familiarity adds a layer of intrigue there. I'm not worried about that one. I think that the only game that could get out, I mean, they could always get out of hand. But if you just look at it, I think the game more likely to get out of hand would be the AFC game, just because the Bengals, top to bottom, their roster is not as good as the Chiefs' roster is. And you know, we've seen them beat the Chiefs recently, but it's kind of a fluky game. A lot of things happen at the end, penalties, et cetera. Had some big plays on the Bengals' side. So I think that's the recipe. You know, if the Bengals can continue to find some big plays down the field, if they can kind of trade punches with the Chiefs offense, then I think we could see two really good games again. But if the Bengals struggle in pass protection, let's put it this way. If the Bengals score 16 points through the first 3.5 quarters against the Chiefs, that game has a chance of getting out of hand.
And then on that one, the other thing that makes me nervous, it's not just that Burrow got sacked 9 times by the Titans last week. It's that 8 of them came with just a 4-man rush. And I know the Titans have talent there and they got that great defensive tackle, but 8 sacks with a 4-man rush, that makes me nervous.
Yeah, the Titans do a really good job of kind of playing with your pass protection rules, because those 4 guys are coming from a lot of different places. You know, they'll drop Harold Landry all the time. They'll bring a defensive back coming off the edge. A lot of twists and stunts involved in that. And I'm sure the Chiefs looked at that and will pick up on it. You know, they'll say they struggle even when bringing 4, when the 4 are coming from some unpredictable places. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some simulated pressures from the Chiefs and, you know, some creative ways to make them think that you're coming and bringing extra bodies, but not. So, you know, I think that is absolutely the area where you have to be worried about the Bengals. So their offensive line is one of the lesser groups in the entire league. And it's a testament to what Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and those skill position players have been up to this point, that they've even made it this far.
And that's why I hope that game isn't a blowout. Like, when I put my notes together for this game, it might not be my number one, but my number two is I want to see cocky/confident Joe Burrow. And I don't mean cocky in a bad way. His talking points about how, like, this is what they expect. This is the new norm. And we saw what he did last time against Kansas City, and he's been steady, sometimes spectacular in the playoffs. And I want to see Max Burrow against that defense.
I don't think you have to worry about his confidence level. I think that's something that's going to be pretty steady from here on out. And I'm excited to see it. I mean, you know, he's just somebody who's become really must-see TV. You know, he's one of those quarterbacks that you make a point that you're going to from here on out. Obviously, everyone's going to watch this game, but even in the next year, I think he's just one of those guys that you make a point to carve out some time in your day to watch him. And that's really the biggest compliment I can give somebody. It's making me stop in my tracks and say, I want to see what this guy does in this moment. He's definitely reached that point.
Yeah, you know, it's been a while for that for the Bengals. Even when they were winning with Andy Dalton, no one ever said, hey, Andy Dalton's on. Everyone shut up. I want to watch what he does here. Maybe like half a year when Jeff Blake was a quarterback for the Bengals and some of the Carson Palmer years, but it's been a long time. On one of your videos, you talked about, you gave praise for a group that doesn't usually get much, the Bengals defense. I was wondering if you could tell the listeners a little bit about the Bengals D, because, woof, they're going to be in on it. They're going to have to do something special this weekend.
Just a really solid group overall. You know, when they put that group together, I was concerned just because they don't have stars. And when you don't have true difference makers on that side of the ball, it can be tough. So when I was looking at the guys they signed this offseason, you think about Trey Hendrickson and then Chidobe Awuzie, and then even going back into last offseason, guys like Von Bell, DJ Reader. Yeah, this is a defense built through free agency because the Bengals just haven't drafted very well at all. And it's really tough to build a good unit with those types of guys because you're overpaying for the most part. And again, true difference makers don't often hit free agency, but I've been so impressed at how this group has really played like more than the sum of its parts. You know, you have a secondary that's just full of really solid players. So Mike Hilton is another one of those free agents that came over from Pittsburgh. You saw what he did in that last game. Awuzie has been fantastic. Jesse Bates has made his share of plays in the playoffs, and that is a homegrown guy that they have. And up front, I mean, Reader was unbelievable. Their defensive tackle against the Titans and against the run. And Hendrickson has really picked up where he left off last season with the Saints. I was worried that if he becomes a true number one rusher, you know, he's not the second, third option. He's a full-time player, which he wasn't all the time in New Orleans. Can he continue this sort of production? And the answer has been yes. So I think among all the units in the entire league this season, you know, they've probably been one of the more four or five surprising groups based on what my preseason expectations were from them and what they ended up being.
Yeah, no, it's going to get overshadowed because we're obviously going to focus on the Chiefs offense as we should and Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase, but it is a better group than I think people might realize. And they did a good job in that second half of that the Chiefs game near the end of the season. On the other side, on the NFC, I mean, obviously there's 100 questions, namely probably the health of half the 49ers. All of them look like they were hobbling at some point in that game against the Packers. But my question is do you think they'll be able to score enough? I mean, what happens if they don't get the block punt and block field goal again?
I think that their defense or their offense has really done a good job against the Rams over the last couple of years. Even last year in 2020, when the Rams had the best defense in football, you know, they're just shutting people out left and right and making it really, really difficult. The Niners always found a way to move the ball. I think that Kyle Shanahan has done a very good job of understanding, even if we're not creating big explosive plays against this team, we can really manufacture methodical drives based on the way they play and based on our understanding of their rules. So that to me is a big advantage. I think the familiarity there that Kyle Shanahan has with the way the Rams play and how many times he's seen them, to me it's a little bit different than the challenge that the Packers presented last week. Also, it's not going to be sub-zero weather. The fact that you were playing in more normal conditions, that definitely played a part in the passing game struggles for the Niners, I would say, and the passing game struggles for the Packers as well. So I would expect a better output from Garoppolo and from that group this weekend than they had last weekend.
You're right. And they do have one extra day off because that game was on Saturday. And like anything, I'm just hoping all those players that were looking beat up are all healthy because we just want the best game out there. And as you mentioned, Robert, off the top, that game should be incredible, third time facing off against each other this year. On the podcast, and I apologize, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet. I've been driving around today. But you talked to you, one of the topics of conversation was your biggest takeaways from the 2021 rookie class. I'm curious, I don't know if the best way to put it is what has been learned, but what can be learned of the quarterbacks of Fields and Lawrence, Wilson and Jones? I'll keep Trey Lance out of it. He hasn't played enough, but I don't know, like, what lessons have you learned from those guys about who they might be?
I think the biggest lesson is a lesson we've learned a lot over the years. And this year isn't special, but I think it kind of hammered home some of these ideas, and it's that your support system as a quarterback is hugely important, and not only the players around you but whatever team drafts you. And you look at the Patriots and their offensive system and what they put on their quarterback, just the amount of responsibilities and at the line of scrimmage and changing plays. I mean, it's a really good incubator for quarterback development, the way that they play. And I think that you saw that with Mac Jones and just how much control he had at the line of scrimmage at times, and just his total understanding of the offense. I think that they empower their quarterbacks on the mental side in a way that is good for their development. And then just with the support system, New England has one of the best offensive lines in football when all those guys are healthy. This is a team that was drafting in the middle of the first round last year, and even that was a little bit misleading because they lost more guys to COVID exemptions last season than any other team in the league. So this is a team that spent a lot of money in free agency that was probably better than their 2020 record would have indicated, and you have a quarterback stepping into that situation, and then you have a quarterback going to Jacksonville with a first-year head coach, a staff that clearly was in over its head, and a support system that isn't very good. You know, a group of receivers that continuously ran into one another, that are playing out of position in terms of what roles you're asking them to fill. I mean, this is a team that really needed to lean on Jamal Agnew at times last season for speed in their secondary. Jamal Agnew is a career kick returner. I mean, he was wearing number 39. I mean, it's the fact that they had to tap into that is concerning. And you see that, and we know this, right? We know how important that is. But to see it so starkly this year with prospects like Trevor Lawrence, who we've been talking about for 5 years since he was in high school, it's just a reminder of that to me. And I still have some real faith in what Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields can become in the right circumstances. But I feel like those circumstances are what my biggest takeaway was from watching that group this year.
I noticed you didn't mention Zach Wilson. I guess the question sort of then is, who do you have the most faith in? And not them, but the organizations, the present talent, and the people who decide who to draft and who to bring in more talent.
And that's a great question. I mean, with Chicago, we're starting over, right? And
yeah.
You don't know. I mean, they're what the plan is going to be is dependent on how Ryan Poles, their new GM, wants to build that organization and that roster. We still don't know who the coach is going to be. And the same goes for Jacksonville. You know, obviously they kept Trent Baalke, which I think is probably a mistake. I think if you could probably have a clean break there and just start over, it would have been the right move. They decided not to do that. So now you have the same front office that built that team is going to be responsible for building this team. And who knows who the coach is going to be. You know, if it ends up being Byron Leftwich, that's interesting to me. You know, this is a guy who obviously played in the NFL for a really long time. I feel like is going to be a good kind of calming presence for a Trevor Lawrence, somebody that really is just a voice in the room. It's just an empathetic ear who understands this kind of stuff, and I think that does matter. And if he does bring that kind of Arians-based system to Jacksonville, I'm all for that. I mean, when you look at Trevor Lawrence and just his physical ability and the way that he can throw the football, that offense is so aggressive and so down the field and vertical. I think it's a decent match with his skill set. Now the question is, can we get some pass catchers in there? You know, can they really understand how to put together that group? Because you know, I think Marvin Jones is a pretty good player. But outside of Marvin Jones, they have Laviska Shenault, whose role was totally muddled and difficult to understand. DJ Chark gets hurt. You know, they have to trade for Dan Arnold midway through the season to get a pass-catching tight end, even though they had all the money in the world to bolster that position in free agency and decided to completely bypass it. Inside, you know, Chris Manhurst as a blocker, but no one to catch the football. It's just the lack of cohesion and vision and the way that they built that thing, I think, was really obvious. And we'll see what happens on the coaching side. If it's Leftwich, I have faith. But in terms of the guys picking the players, it's harder to be enthusiastic about that based on what we've seen.
Yeah, they certainly don't deserve. The benefit of the doubt is hard to do with Jacksonville. Hey, Robert, as I let you go, I was wondering if you just tell everyone where they can find your work, the writing, and, of course, the podcast.
The podcast is every day, the Athletic Football Show. We do it 5 days a week, so please come check it out. Today we had our draft show with Lance Zierlein and Dane Brewer, who do it every single Wednesday. They do a fantastic job. We broke down some of our lessons from the 2020 draft, and they talked to Jim Nagy, who runs the Senior Bowl. We had a reaction to the Sean Payton retirement yesterday with our Saints writer Kat Terrell and Lindsey Jones, because I was on a plane. And I'll talk to Lindsey tomorrow. We'll just run through all of the coaching news, you know, the GM hires in Chicago and Minnesota, where kind of these searches stand. And, that's really it. So every day we got a little bit of a different flavor, and, you know, hopefully people will come check it out.
Fair to say the Giants are in a better place because they no longer have Gettleman?
Oh, I definitely think so.
Okay.
And then now it's just the question of what they want this to look like. You know, Joe Shane was part of a pretty significant teardown in Buffalo, and you know, a pretty significant teardown of an expensive roster. You know, he actually has a pretty appropriate background and experience, so level of experience to deal with what the Giants are going to have to do, because this is an expensive team that was one of the worst teams in football last year. So they're in a pretty big hole. They've got some nice draft capital, but it's going to be a challenge for him. But I think that his past experience in Buffalo is going to set him up well to deal with that.
It's always good when you're one of the worst teams and you're at the cap limit. That's delightful. Follow the man on Twitter at Robert Mays. Check out the Athletic Football Show podcast. All the best, Robert. Thank you so much for joining the show today.
Appreciate it, guys.
Take care. Robert Mays from The Athletic. We'll have Julia Tesseri will join us at 2:30. We will get into the Leafs and the Anaheim Ducks and all. It's actually funny. They've been off for a bunch of days, but with these line changes and just letting you see what it looks like, it's actually, you know, it's more of a compelling game. I think it's more of a compelling game because Sheldon Keefe is experimenting a little bit with what he is going to do. On the other side of the show, I want to hear from LeBron James and Pascal Siakam on the opportunity of playing point guard. We get into that right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Koz. I'm seeing Josh Inglis, who comes on the show all the time, from covers.com. He likes the Leafs at minus 110 on the puck line, thus the beating the Anaheim Ducks by more than a goal. I am nervous. I'm nervous about that just because, and listen, I know bad teams will have good runs, but you go out and you beat Boston, you beat Tampa, you put five goals up on Vasilevsky the other night. That's a pretty big deal. Last time the Leafs played the Ducks, they won 5-1. That was back near the end of November when the Leafs were on their best heater of the year. But it should be reminded Jack Campbell faced 40 shots that night. He will start tonight in net. Also, with all the line changes, I do wonder a little bit about about the game. And it's not, the Leafs are going to try to win. You try to win every game. But if tonight's game is also a bit about an experiment, about to see about guys on different lines and will it work, will it not work, then is this game as important? Like, this game could be, even if we lose the battle, it's about winning the war, seeing what you got and don't got, because you're not going to have as much time to practice come February, March, and April when you're playing almost every other day. While we're here for a second, just a couple prop bets. I don't see any value in the Austin Matthews. And he hasn't scored in like two games. I believe he did score against the Rangers. I got to go back and look. But there's no value. Minus 110 to score. Minus 123 not to score. I'm not really a fan of that. The one that interests me the most maybe is Nylander. Now, he's down on that third line. Plus 161 to score. Or what about Mitch Marner? Minus 130 for just to get one assist. In his last 22 games, Marner's got 9 goals and 25 points. I kind of like that. So I'm avoiding Matthews. I'm tempted by Nylander, especially at plus 161. And Marner seems like a pretty easy bet, but I'm nervous about the Leafs game. Just to me, there's not value. Minus 279. Puck line from minus 110, minus 115. I don't know about that line. Julia Tesseri, host of Leafs Lunch, she will join us in a little bit to talk about all things Maple Leafs. I want to remind everyone that the strategy with Bell Let's Talk Day, built on 4 pillars. Anti-stigma, improving access to care, supporting world-class research, and leading by example in workplace mental health. Today is Bell Let's Talk Day. So anytime you send out a tweet or something on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, use the hashtag Bell Let's Talk, and Bell will donate 5 cents. And they also donate 5 cents for every applicable text call and, as I mentioned, social media interaction. As for the Toronto Raptors, maybe the most interesting thing was just how comfortable Siakam looked basically playing point guard. No Fred VanVleet. Siakam finished with a career-high 12 assists, and he looked comfortable with it. And most importantly, like just that cliche of letting the game slow down and just all those, you know, those different expressions. Well, we saw it last night where Siakam was patient. He waited, and he made Charlotte pay every time they sent a double. There was a lot of open shots and layups created by Siakam and his vision. And let's hear from Pascal Siakam talking about the opportunity of playing point guard.
Definitely an opportunity. I feel like, you know, I've been getting better just like again, like I said, like I've been pushing this, like just trying to be an overall, like a overall player. Like I feel like I can do that. Most nights, you know, like just being the best player out there and making my teammates better. And I think that that's kind of like the role that I'm trying to take on. And obviously with Fred and Scotty out, you know, makes it even like not easier, but like, you know, you have to do it. Right. So it's like, so yeah, it was good to have that. I mean, the guys played super well. They stepped up. You know, we talked about the last game and coming in with a little, you know, energy and focus. And just from that last game, we didn't want to have the same thing. And I think the guys responded. You know, super proud of them for that.
A nice night. Again, 39 minutes, 24 points, 9 rebounds, 12 assists. One rebound away from the triple-double. I don't think he actually really cares about it. Actually, let's hear Siakam talking about it on missing out on a triple-double again.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's funny. I think it's, I have a thing with triple-doubles, you know. I don't know. Yeah, I want to blame Chris, but I'm not going to do that to Chris. We wanted to rebound, so that's good. I mean, it is what it is, man. I don't even know what happened. I think there was like, I mean, in my head, I was like, oh, yeah, you had a triple-double. And then I think they came the next, I don't know if it was like 4 days after. It was like something crazy, right? I don't even think that happened. That had to be a record, you know? Just like, because I don't know if they check other things like that, you know? But, hey, man, it is what it is. I think for me, like, as long as we win, man, I'm cool. Like, be out there and getting wins is more important to me.
I want him to go the other way, Conrad, where it's like wins are important, but triple doubles way more important for me.
Yeah, you know, the guy needs to get his own every now and then, so why don't you you know, a little shameless self promotion there, Pascal?
Yeah, exactly. You know, just once I want the athlete to say, you know, I know sometimes they think it but they don't say it. Just come out and say it. The win was nice, but a triple-double would have been nicer.
Seems like he did blame Chris Boucher at the beginning of that, though.
Yeah, exactly. Shame on Boucher. By the way, I mean, Boucher, Achiuwa, Delano Banton, and Malachi Flynn all contributing on the same night. Also played a big part of the Raptors beating Charlotte a night without Scotty Barnes and Fred VanVleet. And as of now, like, there's no 100%, but both VanVleet and Scotty Barnes did travel with the team, so it looks like they will play. Keep that in mind if you're going to be putting down a bet on Bulls and the Raptors. I've seen it from anywhere from 3.5 Bulls favored to 4.5. That's sort of the range that game has been in. Going back to the NBA, to me, the big story, obviously the Lakers beating Brooklyn 106-96, but that was more about the return of Anthony Davis. And this is going to put all eyes on L.A. And there's going to be, they go on a bit of a run here. There's going to be the Laker hype train is coming. Let's hear from LeBron James with the team being in full swing.
You know, we continue to see how dynamic we can be, both offensively and defensively. And, you know, and it also puts everybody in their, you know, just their regular, you know, positions. So, you know, the more minutes that we log, you know, as AD get back into full strength in the game shape, and, you know, we just try to stay in rhythm as a team. We want to continue to work our habits.
Keep an eye on that. Just, you know, now the excuses will go away for the Lakers. Beating Brooklyn again. Brooklyn, only Harden, no Durant, no Kyrie. I had a tough day with some of my Raptors bets, but I was all over the Harden overs, all of them covered. All right, on the other side, Julia Teixeira, host of Leafs Lunch, is going to join the show. We'll talk about line blender changes by Sheldon Keefe, struggling Tavares, and a Debbie Downer take on Keith Yandle. That is coming up next right here on Gameplay. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. Joining me now, host of Leafs Lunch, it is Julia Tesheri joining the show. Julia, thanks so much for taking time.
How's it going, Matt? Anytime, dude.
I'm doing well. I'm up at girlfriend's cottage, and we build our own. And by build, we just shut.
Oh, I saw it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, we got the ice rink going. My girlfriend, I could see her outside, and she's skating as I'm slaving over a hot mic here. So I am doing well, and I imagine you're doing well that you had a game today. Like, I was going to start with this. How squirrely do you get when there's like 3 days off between games?
Oh my gosh, it's hilarious you'd bring this up, because Al's brother and I have been talking about this the past 2 days. Like, if the Leafs go 4 days without a game, I start to sound like SpongeBob. You know the SpongeBob episode where he lacks water? He's like, water! That's what I feel like. I hate when the Leafs don't play, and it's been forever since they've played at home, it feels like. Like, I haven't been to a Leafs game in a bajillion years, and I'll actually be at Scotiabank tonight, and I've never actually been in the building when there's no one in it. So I'm curious about how that experience will be. Yeah.
That's gonna probably feel surreal. I mean, parking is easier. Not that I don't know if you're driving.
Totally.
And then going through the concourse, simple. I doubt there's many food and drink options. I'd be curious. I'm going to be listening tomorrow just about what does that feel like being in this giant empty building?
Yeah, I'm curious to know too. I've never been in that scenario, especially since we're so up high in the media gondola.
Yeah.
Like, it's already weird to be all the way up there. Never mind to be all the way up there and have nobody else fill in the gap between. So I'm curious to know how that goes down, but I'm jacked up that the Leafs are finally back at home.
Wait a minute. Can you sneak down? Can you get into like row two? Can you get the platinum seats? There's no one there.
Oh, I'll be trying. I'm for sure going to pull some antics for TSN's TikTok tonight. So be on the lookout for that too.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely should be. By the way, next time there's 4 days off, you got to do just like Leaf anagrams. You know, just take Ilya Mikheyev and try to create new words. I think that would be a ratings win.
Oh, that's good. That's a good one. I got to write that down. That's a good idea, Cause.
Yeah. So I think to me, the most fascinating thing is I will often make jokes about coming up next. What's going on with the Leafs' third line? And, you know, because everyone gets so obsessed with the Leafs, we obsess about sometimes the minutia. But tonight is really different. Like, I am wildly curious to see what does a Nylander-led line look like. And Kerfoot's had a good year, and Kampf at center. Like, I mean, I know this is the experiment line blender night, but I'm generally fascinated to see what that looks like.
Yeah, I think that's the one people have kind of circled as just a line that's really interesting. We had James Myrtle on in the noon hour on Leafs Lunch, and he was talking a lot about how interesting this line is, mostly because it's a combination that we've never seen before. And I'm also looking forward to seeing Tavares and Marner back together. I like the way that duo clicks. Tavares has been a little bit quiet lately, so I feel like this might have something to do with getting him going. And then Mikheyev on the wing, like, that guy just flies, so he'll just bring the intensity up on that line a little bit. The first line we've all been loving lately with Matthews, Bunting, and Kasha, but you're right about that third line. And Myrtle's perspective on it when I was talking to him today on the show was that it might be a situation, because Sheldon Keefe has really made it clear in the media that this is not a demotion for William Nylander to the third line. And in fact, it's to help out the third line. So it might be a scenario where the second and third line are both kind of like the second line, because he doesn't want William Nylander's ice time to suffer either. So it'll be interesting to see, and I'm sure Sheldon Keefe is so good with being reactive on the bench with if something's not working, he's not afraid to tinker with it. So it'll be interesting to see how Nylander's ice time is affected by this move, because I have a feeling that this second line and this third line is just going to be, it's just going to kind of be a crapshoot in terms of what the second line actually is. It's kind of like a 1A and 1B, or I guess 2B and 2A scenario with these two lines.
Yeah, and it's one of these things where you're going to have to keep a close eye on your TV or you live about who's jumping over the boards.
Yeah, that's actually hard. I find it easier. Sometimes I find it easier to digest games when I've got Gord Miller and Ray Ferraro holding my hand through the duration of Bonesy or whoever I'm listening to. And I can't also pause in person, which is very difficult. I hate when I can't say, Austin, can you just do that over again? I just want to make sure I saw that right.
I want a TikTok video. Sorry to interrupt, of you just yelling, pause. I was like, can you score that again? I want to see what happened on the forecheck.
Yeah, that's honestly a good idea. And there's so much space. When we were in the World Juniors it wasn't a bubble, that whole debacle in Red Deer. Hilariously enough, I was able to hear, the building wasn't at full capacity, I was at the very bottom, close to the ice, and I was able to hear Craig Button from all the way up at the top of the rink. So I feel like if I yell loud enough in an empty barn, they'll definitely hear me.
God, I want that to happen. I also wonder, and last question just about this, the theme of the line shuffle, is I wonder if last year the Canadians, the Philip Deneau line, helping to doing a big job of shutting down Matthews and Marner, where they just combined for one goal. I wonder if that's any of this. They're like, okay, we've seen in the playoffs, I throw all the talent on one line and it can get shut down. Well, if they're all separated, then that would mitigate that. I wonder if that played any part in this desire to experiment.
You know, I see a lot of similarities between this team and between the Tampa Bay Lightning team that's just won two Stanley Cups back-to-back. And something notable about that Tampa team is that they don't have, like, Boston's perfection line. You know what I mean? They don't have that one, like, killer line that's just loaded with everyone on it. They have a very balanced lineup, and that's what made them so dangerous the past couple of seasons. Like, the third line was eating everybody in the playoffs. And maybe that's the approach, that's a good point. That's the approach that Sheldon Keefe is trying to take here, because if maybe Matthews is all tied up with the top matchup in the first line, then Tavares can come into play, and then you've got a huge threat with Kerfoot, Kampf, and Nylander still deep in the lineup on the third line, and then Engvall, Spezza, and Simmons doesn't sound like a bad fourth-line combination either. So that's a great point, and I think that has a lot to do with it, balancing the lineup so that every single unit could be a threat to the other team.
Yeah. And we're going to find out tonight. And by the way, the other side to all this, Julia, is talking about you guys getting squirrely. That's not going to happen in about a week from now, where it feels like from about early February to mid-April, it's kind of almost a game every other day with the rare 2 days off.
Oh, gosh, I'm excited for that. I know it's like, it's not going to be much fun for the players. You're going to have some of those guys in oxygen tanks, and obviously, you know what's going to be really interesting about that second half of the season, though, when things get really condensed? We've been talking a lot about, obviously, Jack Campbell's numbers have come back down to the earth as of late, but he'll have another chance to kind of get back to his groove tonight. It was nice to see Peter Mrazek have a good game on Saturday. I think the organization really needed that, and he really needed that. So maybe we'll see. And the estimate that James Myrtle gave on our show was like 40% of the starts going forward. That's going to be the thing. So as much fun as me and Al's brother are going to be having with games every second night, we'll have so much to talk about, and we'll be having so much fun. The workload between goaltenders, I think, is the thing that most people will end up paying the most attention to, because Jack Campbell obviously had a crazy November, came back to earth a little bit here in December and January, and like Peter Mrazek is a proven NHL goalie. Like, he's played big games, he's been in important scenarios, and I think the more that they can incorporate him into games, the better it'll be for the organization. I think that's the one place with this condensed schedule that the Leafs are kind of looking at and thinking, okay, is this little tandem situation that we planned on earlier in the season going to work out? Because I think that's what they have to revert to now. They can't just roll with Jack Campbell, who's just not used to the workload.
Well, they didn't give him the 3 years and the close to $12 million.
Exactly.
For it to, you know, like, it's supposed to be 1A, 1B, and it's fine if Mrazek is B, but it can't be like back in the day when Brodeur would be playing like 64 games a year. They're not going to be able to survive like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't have a guy making $3.8 million sitting on your bench all season, especially when you have to negotiate a deal for Campbell. Because maybe Mrazek starting to step up will affect how that deal gets done this summer, too, or whenever the Campbell deal gets done. So it is important for the team, for sure.
By the way, speaking of deals, I know you guys were talking about Chris Johnston and the Leafs and the fact that they'd be open and getting a player with term. And kind of the same theme as what happened last year, how much does it impact the thinking this year? The Foligno situation with all the draft capital and you got basically nothing out of it. I wonder how much that's going to spook Kyle Dubas and the management team to not go after rentals this year.
Yeah, I get that for the Leafs, especially with how many contracts have to get done this summer. I just mentioned Jack Campbell, Mikheyev's another one. There's a whole bunch of guys that are going to need to sign new deals this summer, so I can't imagine Bringing someone in who they'll need to re-up this summer would be very attractive to the Leafs. I don't know. I kind of feel bad. Dubas gets a real black mark on his name for the Foligno situation, and I kind of feel for him.
No black mark. By the way, no black mark here.
Yeah,
There was an injury, and they most of the time, when you go grab a free agent, it doesn't usually work out. And
yeah.
There's been far more successes with the Muzzins and the Jack Campbells of the world. I'm just thinking, I just wonder if does that move... Does that impact it at all, or do they just, you know, go full goldfish and have no memory?
I can't decide. I think for sure that we'll see something get done here, and it'll be interesting to see what goes the other way. I remember earlier in the season the name that was bounced around on insider trading, and that's when Muzzin and Hull were really, really struggling at the beginning of the season. They both look a little bit better now, but I remember Dermott and Hull being the two names that were kind of in question to go the other way. I don't know. I don't see... It's hard to say. I don't want to say, like, empty the closet right now because
I know that's
not the attractive answer, but something's going to have to go the other way, and the Leafs do need more help on the blue line. Like, we saw what it looked like without Muzzin and Hull in the lineup, and Muzzin just hasn't been to the same standard that he's been in the past. So I think they will need to do something on the blue line. I think they definitely will. Kyle Dubas is a really aggressive GM. He usually gets his deals done before the deadline even happens. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes down. I've been seeing the names bounce around. I don't know which one is the most attractive to me, but I'm very interested to see which one lands in a blue jersey.
Hey, to me, the number one thing when it comes to defense, I'm looking less at who's not here and more if Muzzin, because if Muzzin can get back to being 85, 90% of what he was last year, that makes Hull better, that makes the second line strong, and it means less, you're putting less pressure on the Sandines, Dermots, and Liljegrens of the world. Before I let you go, I got to ask you this, because you were talking about... you know, the Keith Yandle, the record, Ironman record. Scale of 1 to 10 on the Debbie Downer scale. Scale 1 to 10. When I throw out the Keith Yandle record, it's impressive. But how impressive is it really if Phil Kessel is close to breaking it? How much of a Debbie Downer am I for even just floating that idea?
Listen, I like Phil Kessel a lot. He is a great character in Toronto. He's a great character for the game.
Yep.
I don't know. Like, it's still pretty impressive. Think about how Phil Kessel plays hockey. Like, Phil Kessel doesn't put himself in very high danger scenarios.
Oh, no.
Like, if anybody's
That's how
gonna,
I would play.
You know what I mean? Honestly, same.
Yeah.
So, it is still really impressive. Like, we
it
had Shane
is.
Doan on Leafs Lunch Day, and he was talking a little bit about Yandle and his character and just, like, what kind of guy he is. It is so difficult. Like, I know the Overdrive guys were really ragging on Keith Yandle in this record. Like, check out their maximum games played in a season. Like, it is so difficult to play so many NHL games, especially in a row. Like, it's a game where, like, people get hurt. Like, every single day someone gets hurt. Every single day you're left with, like, some hit that makes you cringe. To play in that many games in a row without one thing keeping you out of the lineup, especially the COVID pandemic. Like, how did the guy not miss any games, like, just with a scare or with a false positive? Like, it is wildly impressive. I it's not a Debbie Downer to me. If Kessel breaks it, it might suck the wind out of it just a little bit, but, like...
Thank you. Thank
it works for me somehow because he plays the game in a way that ensures his longevity is how I'll put it in the kindest of terms.
By the way, I think you're lying about you would be more the Kessel style. From everything I've heard, you weren't afraid, you know, to mix it up. You see, I'm a coward. You know, I'm the guy that would play like Phil. I'm like,
fair enough.
No. I'll be here in the open ice if you want to get me the puck. Otherwise, I'm just going to go back to the bench and take a break.
You know, I am a bit of an angry elf on the ice, so
it's
true.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no way you're setting the Ironman record. Julia, always appreciate, love listening to your guys' show. I enjoyed Shane Doan apologizing for a minute for being late.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny.
Yes, it's so Canadian of him. Julia, take care. All the best. We'll be listening tomorrow. And I can't wait for your report of being in the giant empty arena. Dress a little warmer. And I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. But when there's no humans there, that place is a lot colder.
You actually just did. I'll remember that. Thank you so much.
No worries. No worries. Least I can do. You took the time to join the show. All the best, Julia.
Thank you.
That is Julia Tesheri, host of Leafs Lunch. We got Dave Festchuk join us at 3, and there's a big picture Raptors question I want to throw out, and we'll do that on the other side. I'm Matthew Kaz. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaz. Today is the 12th annual Bell Let's Talk Day. Bell will donate 5 cents for every applicable text, call, or social media interaction. Go to your Twitter, your Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, whatever. Use the hashtag Bell Let's Talk. 5 cents will be donated. And remember to everybody to keep listening, keep talking, just keep being there for yourself and each other, for others. So, and if you need any other information, you can go to bell.ca/letstalk. I don't know if people are aware of this, and I know I caught my producer by surprise, and I was surprised. I saw it on Twitter earlier. Today is the 2-year anniversary of the death of Kobe Bryant, one of his daughters, and the group of eight, I think it was 8 or 9 people in the helicopter crash. And, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, Conrad, but for me, it feels like in the last 2 years, so much has changed, and also feels like nothing's happened in the last 2 years.
Yeah, you put that pretty accurately, Matt. And you know what? Because so much has changed, at some times it almost feels like it's been longer than that since Kobe Bryant has unfortunately left this world. But, yeah, sad.
Where were you? Sorry to interrupt, because like, I feel like Kobe, there's certain things, and again, it always depends on your age. Like, I know exactly where I was during the O.J. Simpson, the car chase. I was watching, you know, I think it was like game five between the New York Knicks and the Houston Rockets in the finals. But do you remember where you were, or were you too young for that one?
You know what, Matt? I'm not 100% sure where I am, but I can be pretty positive that during the lockdown or multiple lockdowns that we've had, I was probably at home. And my cousin, who's a huge Lakers and Kobe Bryant fan, sent me the text. So I remember getting it from him, and it was pretty shortly after that, probably within an hour of the news breaking.
I remember I was on a boat. Oh, no, actually, no, but you didn't answer my first question. Do you remember where you were for OJ, or were you too young for that one?
OJ was 1995, was it?
No. Okay, so no, you don't remember. It's fine. You're 30. It's okay.
It was June 16th. That's the date, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a 30 for 30 about it. So I was probably too young to... Yeah. The Rangers were also playing in a Stanley Cup final game that day, correct?
I wasn't really following the hockey as much because I'm a Knicks fan. So for me, it was just all about Ewing and Starks.
Yeah,
and
I'm just recounting the 30 for 30 episode that it was, because there was a huge amount of sports news going on that day. But the OJ chase was obviously the biggest story.
Yeah, that was in 1994.
94, okay.
Yep. For me, for Kobe, I was on this like little cruise. I was visiting my dad who was in Barbados, and we were on this little boat. And, I mean, it couldn't be more of a contrast. You're just sitting there, you know, having tropical drinks on the ocean, and then suddenly, you know, someone blurted out, you know, it happened, you know, Kobe died in the helicopter crash, and just the entire mood and everything just changed on the boat at that time. It was just absolutely surreal. So, yeah, 2 years. And as we talked about before, the real shame is we were seeing a next act for Kobe Bryant, someone who has championed women's sports, you know, who won an Oscar for a doc and was, you know, just becoming this different person than the one we saw on the court. Moving on awkwardly from that topic, earlier this morning, Felix Auger-Aliassime with a man, he had a good chance. I don't know how much of the match you watched. Thank you to Gord Miller for reminding me, tweeting out the match was on. So I caught the fifth set, and he loses in 5 sets to Medvedev, who was the pre-tournament favorite after Novak was booted out of Australia. But if he had money on Auger-Aliassime, he was going in at +510. And he had a chance in that fifth set, where it was 5-4. And Auger was up 40-30 love. There, or 40-30. I don't think we put the love there. And there was a chance. He was 1 point away
tying it at five and completely reversing that match. But good on big pitcher Shapovalov and Felix, going five sets in the quarterfinals against higher ranked opponents. Both those matches lasting well over 4 hours. So a great moment for Canadian tennis that came up just a little bit short. The big picture question, and I want to get into this with Dave Feschuk on the other side. The Raptors beat Charlotte yesterday 125-113. No Scotty Barnes, no Fred VanVleet. Instead, they score 125 points on 52% shooting. And what a difference a game makes, where the Raptors against Portland didn't get anything going offensively. And in this game, the exact opposite. Raptors putting up close to 40 points in the first quarter, close to 40 in the second as well, and hitting like their first. They made five of their first 6 3-point shots, 39 points in the first quarter, and 37 in the second. But the big picture question is wins versus lottery balls. Last year, team went for lottery balls. It worked out. They didn't play Kyle Lowry. Everyone rested. They get Scotty Barnes. But this year, feels like team's going for wins. They're too healthy not to. And Nick Nurse says it really is valuable. The playoffs are different, and the experience that you gain there is. You can't gain it anywhere else. It's invaluable just from the intensity, the physicality, the game planning, the adjustments of going through it. You can't place a value on what it means for guys to go through it. The cynic would say the Atlanta Hawks got to the Eastern Conference Finals and they're struggling this year. I've always tended to believe that, yeah, going for it, trying to get as good seeding, getting the playoffs, especially with a young team, it will teach you lessons and improve your ability as a basketball player. But I want to get in that debate. We'll do that next with Dave Feschuk, get his thoughts on the Hall of Fame, on the Leafs game, on the lineup changes. That's what I always love about having Dave on. There's 100 different places to go. We'll do our best to get through as many of them as we can. Dave Feschuk from the Toronto Star joins us next, but time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update.